interrupt this broadcast to bring you this important bulletin from the United Press. Flash, Washington.
We interrupt our program to bring you a special broadcast. The German news agency...
We interrupt this program to bring you a news bulletin from Washington. The White House has just announced...
Here is a news bulletin. Shots have reportedly been fired.
Here's another late development, and this news keeps coming in.
This is an NBC News hotline report.
Special report. Verdict sparks violence. National earthquake.
Secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. The incidents, places. My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer. Can your heart stand the shocking facts of the true story of Joshua P. Warren?
Of the sky and to high strangers around the globe. This is Speaking of Strange with Joshua P. Warren.
And the world is becoming more and more insane every day. Welcome to the program that gives you breaking news and insight regarding the paranormal and downright weird, where the unusual becomes usual. And we don't just discuss it, we go in the field to investigate. Let me tell you, this is possibly our most highly anticipated edition of all year. Yes, we do Halloween editions throughout October, but this is the Halloween edition. Call your friends. Don't turn that dial. Oh, what we have planned for you tonight. And every Halloween, you get these weirdo little stories that pop up that have to do specifically with the culture of Halloween. So let's begin tonight. In Pennsylvania, if you haven't heard this already, it's actually very sad. It's weird. Police are saying that a 9-year-old girl in Pennsylvania was accidentally shot outside her house during a Halloween party because a relative thought she was a skunk. She was wearing a little black and white costume with tassels. And the chief of police there said that the male relative thought there was a skunk outside, grabbed a shotgun, and fired. Hit her in the shoulder, the arm, back, and neck. She was flown to the Children's Hospital of Pittsburgh, about 30 miles away. We are awaiting word of her condition. The man says he had not been drinking. They're trying to determine if charges will be filed. How weird is that? Every Halloween, you get these odd stories that are the product of the culture of Halloween. Things we don't usually do, putting on costumes. And tonight, we are going to dig into the multifaceted strangeness of it all. Hey, thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, author of books like Haunted Asheville, How to Hunt Ghosts, and The Secret Wisdom of Kukulcan. I'm founder and president of Lemur Paranormal Investigations. My producer and engineer tonight is Mr. Hardwood Forrest Connor. Good evening, Forrest.
Good evening, Mr. Warren.
And, hey, it's Halloween time,
it
practically.
Is.
This is Halloween celebration night.
Right. It's a few days before Halloween. So.
Yeah, it's one of those years when Halloween falls right in the middle of the week on a weeknight, and people just don't get out and party on a Wednesday that much.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure, you know, you'll still have trick-or-treaters and really hardcore traditionalists who will be celebrating, but tonight, Saturday, is when all of the absolute madness and chaos is erupting all over the streets around the country, if not many parts of the world.
Well, I like it when Halloween falls in the middle of the week. You've got the weekend before Halloween to go crazy. You've got Halloween itself to go crazy. Then the weekend after Halloween, everyone's going to go crazy with Halloween stuff. So it's basically 10 days of Halloween, of just real big Halloween celebration.
You're absolutely right. And if I'm not mistaken, last year, Halloween fell on a Saturday, right? Because I know we did. Did we do a live show on Halloween? I think we did. And I believe that was possibly going to be our last show before we got the syndication.
Right.
Maybe I'm wrong, but Investigator Shelley Wright, you were here. Do you recall? It was, wasn't it?
I don't.
You see, we have had so many drugs, so much alcohol. We've smoked so many things over the past year. It's just a haze, isn't it, Shelley?
Yes, it is. It's all a haze.
Our veins, our cells are just clogged with black gook. A combination of substances. No, we're just kidding. Don't do that, kids. Yes, we love Halloween. Even though Halloween is, we're slammed. Slam, slam, slam. I'm always talking about how busy I am, but I literally have been so swamped this year with the new TV show, Paranormal Paparazzi, and the museum being in the new location there, and all the tours and all the stuff going. I've been so swamped that I literally dreamed last night I was swamped. There was water pouring in to my house through the windows, and I was panicking trying to pick up stuff and like put it on my bed to prolong its lifespan. So busy. And in fact, a lot of people, as I said, they look forward to this show, and we're going to have a big party right here on the air tonight, because next week I am going to take a week off, and I say that in quotes. What I mean is, I'm just not even going to have time to do this show, and that's because the next Saturday is the big, huge Brown Mountain Light Symposium in Morganton on November 3rd there, your birthday, my mother's birthday, and I am a speaker, a big speaker. I'm debuting a brand new crazy program about what does the government know, and I've just got to take some time to put it together. So it's going to be an extra big party for us tonight. And to help us celebrate, well, of course, there are some traditional things that people have come to expect from us on this Halloween show. There are some poems and stories and songs and subject matter that we dig into to kind of make it our own true little Halloween party here and capture that atmosphere. But tonight, we for years have always checked in with Pinhead's Graveyard, where people are out there screaming in the field, and, you know, they are just having the worst / best night of their lives, depending on how it turns out. Well, Pinhead's Graveyard has taken it to a whole new level this year. They've expanded their operation, and they have done something that I don't think they've ever done before. They have actually invited a special guest to come to Pinhead's Graveyard to help entertain, shall we say, their guests. They actually hired the guy who played Leatherface in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3. His name is R.A. Mihailoff. And this guy is not just an actor. He is a paranormal investigator. He's with a group called Hollywood Ghost Hunters. And so tonight, we're going to touch base with Otis from Pinhead's Graveyard. He's going to tell us about all the new crazy stuff they're doing. And then we're going to have Leatherface on the show. And he is going to tell us a little bit about what it's like for him this time of year, for one thing. And secondly, how being a classic movie monster transformed into being a real paranormal investigator. How interesting is that? So that's going to be a treat. And then later toward the end of the program, I'm going to play something that we take a lot of flack for every year. Every year people say, don't play this. But I have upped the ante even a little bit, because I know you right now you're shaking your head, Shelley. You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
I've got this authentic exorcism audio that is from a young woman who, it's horrible. You can hear just anguish and demonic sounds coming from her. And she actually ended up dying. It's a true story. Her name was Annalise Michael. She ended up dying. A lot of people just turn the radio off, or they email me afterward and they say, you know, this is just wrong. You shouldn't play it. Well, not only are we going to play that, but I have another piece of exorcism footage that I think is even creepier and scarier. And this piece of footage, I mean, people say they can't even sleep after they hear it.
Really?
Yeah. It's that freaky.
I know how it is when you play the other audio. When we say upping the ante,
yeah,
you must be, because that is so incredibly creepy.
Yeah.
I don't get scared. I don't get creeped out, but that creeps me out.
Well, I'm going to save that for the end of the show. And people are already emailing me, and they're saying, look, don't play any of this stuff. I intend to play it, but it's possible I could get talked out of it. I don't think that's going to happen. So maybe we'll discuss this a little bit and see, because I know Forrest...
Actually, Josh, I've got an email right here of someone that just that just wrote in and said don't do it. You don't know what you're dealing with. You don't know the forces you're playing with here.
Well, it is true that maybe when you play this sort of thing, you can unleash something. Maybe you release something on the airwaves. But that's why I say you don't have to listen. You know, we will give everybody a warning. So you can turn to something else. You can turn the radio off. But some people just don't like the very idea that I'm doing it, period. Doesn't matter if they hear it or not. Because we're talking about something that goes beyond, you know, that superficial Hollywood element. I mean, these are real people in real agony. They're battling the forces of light and dark, and sometimes they die, and we're capturing these moments, you know, and it is an awful thing. In fact, honest to God, I get chills when I think about some of this stuff. So we'll see what happens, but we will address this later on in the program. We're coming up on a break here soon. Speaking of creepy stuff, Shelley, how'd you like the big ghost hunt we did last Monday at the Grove House?
It was phenomenal.
Did that not blow your mind?
It did.
Did you have any idea what it was like inside there?
No, I didn't.
Yeah. People, you know, it looks cool from the outside, and they have big decorations and stuff, but you would never guess until you go in there by yourself, and it's dark, and you start wandering through these rambling hallways. How much stuff is it? Tunnels and things you go into.
Tunnels.
Yeah. And, in fact, when we come back from the break, we'll tell people a little bit about our investigation. We're going to do one more of these this coming Monday, the 29th. We're going to do one more ghost hunt at the Grove House. And, you know, we only take 50 people. That's it. We cut it off at 50. We'll get into that and a lot more. It's the best time of year. You picked the perfect night to listen to this show, the Halloween edition. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to the program where we dig into the amazing, the remarkable, the extraordinary, the downright weird, keeping you company tonight. It's called Speaking of Strange. We'll be back right after this.
Just gather around and I'll elucidate on what goes on outside when it gets late.
Long about midnight, the ghosts and banshees, they get together for their nightly jamboree. There's things with horns and saucer eyes, some with fangs about this size.
Some are fat and some are thin.
And some don't even wear their skin.
Oh, I'm telling you, brother, it's a frightful sight to see what goes on Halloween night.
When spooks are having a jamboree, they break it up with fiendish glee. Ghosts are bad, and the one that's cursed is the headless horseman. He's the worst.
That's why he's mad on Halloween. midnight.
But when he goes jogging across the land, holding his noggin in his hand, demons take one look and groan, and the hitching road to part alone.
Beware, take care, he rides alone.
And there's no spook like Spooked Spur.
They don't like him, and he really burns.
He swears to the longest day he's dead.
He'll show them that he can get ahead.
They say he's tired of his flaming top. He's got a yen to make a swap. So he rides one night each year to find a head in the hollow here.
Now he likes them little, he likes them big.
Or in the middle or awake.
Black or white or even red.
The headless horseman needs a head with a
hip, hip, and a clippity clap.
He's out looking for a
chop chop.
So don't stop to figure out a plan. You can't reason with a headless man. Now if you doubt this tale is so, I bet that spook just a year ago. Now I didn't stop for a second look. Pay for the bridge that spans the brook. But once you cross that bridge, my friend,
there's through his power and.
So when you're riding home tonight, make for the bridge with all your might. He'll be down in the hollow there. Keep your head.
Look out! Beware! With a hip, hip, and a hippity-clop. He's down looking for a head to swap. So don't try to figure out a plan. You can't reason with a headless man.
Yeah, happy Halloween. Be careful out there tonight, my friends. All the spooks are in the mountains and around the country. From mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds. This is Speaking of Strange, the program where the unusual becomes usual. If you happen to be in the Asheville area, go to hauntedasheville.com. It's not too late to take some fantastic ghost tours. We have the new vampire and occult tours. My new favorite, hauntedasheville.com. You know, in my book, Pet Ghosts, Animal Encounters from Beyond the Grave, that came out years ago, I wrote some about headless horsemen. And, you know, how odd it is to think of, you know, some reason that a man's spirit could be seen on a horse. And, you know, we just played one of my favorites there from Disney's The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. One of the best songs out there. But here is what I found when I really started looking into the lore of headless horsemen. Horse apparitions, now this is again, this is from Pet Ghosts. Horse apparitions are frequently seen with ghostly human counterparts. The best examples may be the headless horseman, tales of galloping pitch-black steeds mounted by furious decapitated riders have lingered for hundreds of years. Especially found in some of the earliest German and Scandinavian legends, as documented in the 1700s by folklorist Karl Musaus. Such specters are usually the product of wars. A revered officer set on battle who suddenly loses his head exists in a state of delirious confusion. Energy of the tortured man. Frustrated by his inability to complete the fight, especially with adrenaline pumping, may burn a hole between this dimension and the next. Headless horsemen are unable to tell the difference between friend and foe, and so they attack anyone unfortunate enough to cross their paths. The strangest part is the very fact that they ride horses. If a soldier is beheaded but the animal survives, why should the creature be doomed to appear as a misty slave of his master? If the horse is killed at the same time, well, then it makes sense. Otherwise, we must wonder if the beheaded chooses from some stable of phantasmal equines in the netherworld, or if the soldier's horse instantly transforms from a physical to non-physical beast by means of a process misunderstood by science. On the other hand, in some cases, they might simply be imprints, therefore negating the necessity for the horse death. Regardless of the origin, these creatures carrying tormented human souls are certainly impressive phantomals. And I go on and I talk in this book more about horse apparitions, and there's one that I want to bring up here that just the idea of this thing for me conjures up something very creepy. Shelley Forrest, have you guys ever heard of Hearn the Hunter?
No.
Most Americans, I'm sure, probably have not. Hearn the Hunter is an English specter. And it's a very weird, chilling apparition. I'll just read again the best description I can from my book, Pet Ghosts. Another well-known ghost horse and non-headless rider duo is Hearn the Hunter in England's Windsor Park. Now, apparently, around the year 1400, a great forest keeper for King Richard II was a rugged man named Hearn. He spent most of his time alone in the woods, concealed, looking out for poachers and trespassers with whom he dealt harshly. With time, due to gradual loss of his youth and outdoor skill, or fear of being disgraced by some perverse offense, he hanged himself from an oak tree. Since then, the mighty hunter's charging apparition, high astride a black steed, has terrified hundreds of trespassers. The protective Hearn is said to wear a stag's skull on his head, its long, twisting horns making the whole display beastly and surreal. In 1843, author W. Harrison Ainsworth described the sight in his novel Windsor Castle. Here's the description, quote, "A wild, spectral object possessing a slight resemblance to a human being, clad in the skin of a deer and wearing on its head a sort of helmet formed of the skull of a stag, from which branched a large pair of antlers. It was surrounded by a blue phosphoric light," end quote. But this chilling apparition was even recorded much earlier, 1599, by none other than William Shakespeare, in his work called The Merry Wives of Windsor. Here's a quote. "There is an old tale that goes that Hearn the Hunter, sometimes a keeper here in Windsor Forest, doth all the winter time, at still midnight, walk round about an oak with great ragged horns, and there he blasts the tree, and takes the cattle, and makes milk kine yield blood, and shakes a chain in a most hideous and dreadful manner. You have heard of such a spirit, and well you know the superstitious idle-headed eld received and did deliver to our age this tale of Hearn the Hunter for a truth." There you go, a little Shakespeare for Halloween. Didn't see that coming, did you, Shelley?
No, I did not.
I'm a very cultured man.
Yes, you are.
I could have used my English accent, but I didn't want to make all the other men look that bad.
Uh-huh.
To look that cretin and crude below my superior cultural instinct. Right?
Now you're stretching.
All right. Here is an odd story. This is one from Seattle, Washington. Now, we have all heard of this thing called human spontaneous combustion. The idea that you can just all of a sudden just burst into flames. I remember when I was a kid, my mother would never let me have underoos, even though I wanted them. I wanted to dress up like Superman or Batman, but no. Apparently, a child wearing underoos once burst into flames because he got too close to a fireplace. So my mother was determined that underoos were flammable things that kids were wearing. Happy birthday, Mom. Well, listen to this. There is a new culprit in the human spontaneous combustion mystery Banana Boat Sunscreen. The makers of Banana Boat Sunscreen is recalling some 500,000 bottles of spray-on lotion after reports that a handful of people have caught on fire after applying the product and coming into contact with an open flame.
Okay, what about the regular lotion? The after sun lotion? Because I don't want to burst into flames.
Is this what you use, Shelley?
Yes.
Well, you're either way, you're going to burst into flames. If you wear sunscreen, you will. If you don't, you will. You just have to live in a cave. You're too fair to be out in the sun.
I guess.
It says here, the company there is pulling 23 varieties of Ultra Mist sunscreen off store shelves due to the risk of the lotion igniting when exposed to fire. It includes aerosol products like Ultra Mist Sport, Ultra Mist Ultra Defense, and Ultra Mist Kids. Okay, so it sounds like it's just the misty stuff.
Okay, I don't use the misty stuff.
Yeah. It says a company spokesman said there have been 5 reports of people suffering burns after using it in the last year. 4 in the U.S., 1 in Canada. And they say more than 20 million units have been sold, however, since they launched in 2010. They're thinking the problem is the spray valve. And they say that it's over-applying the product, and so it takes longer to dry, and that raises the flammability risk. If a consumer comes in contact with a flame, there is potential to ignite. No smoking. We're going to take a break. Can you believe it? When we come back, we will already be in the final minutes of hour number 1, and a traditional reading for you about Halloween. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's Speaking of Strange.
Hey, my name.
Just gather around, and I'll elucidate on what goes on outside when it gets late.
Long about midnight, the ghosts and banshees, they get together for their nightly jamboree. There's things with horns and saucer eyes, some with fangs about this size.
Some are fat, and some are thin.
And some don't even wear their skin.
Oh, I'm telling you, brother, it's a frightful sight to see what goes on Halloween night.
When spooks are having a jamboree, they break it up with fiendish glee. Ghosts are bad, but the one that's cursed is the headless horseman. He's the worst.
That's why he's mad on Halloween night.
But when he goes to jogging across the land, holding his noggin in his hand, demons take one look and groan, and they hit the road for far as unknown.
Beware, take care. He rides alone.
When there's no spook like Spookage Burns.
They don't like him and he really burns.
He swears through the longest day he's dead.
He'd show them that he can get ahead.
They say he's tired of his flaming top. He's got a yen to make a swap. So he rides one night each year to find a head in the hollow here.
Like the little, he likes
them
big.
Or in the middle, or awake.
Black or white, or even red.
The headless horseman needs a head with a hip, hip,
and a clippity clap.
He's out looking for a chop, chop. So don't stop to figure out a plan. You can't reason with a headless man.
Now, if you doubt this tale is so, I bet that spook just a year ago. Now I didn't stop for a second look to pay for the bridge that spans the brook. But once you cross that bridge, my friend,
this road is power and
so when you're riding home tonight, make for the bridge with all your might. He'll be down in the hollow there. Keep your head.
Look out! Beware!
The hip, hip, and the hippity-clop. He's out looking for a hip to spot. So don't try to figure out a plan. You
the spooks are in the mountains and around the country, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds. This is Speaking of Strange, the program where the unusual becomes usual. If you happen to be in the Asheville area, go to hauntedasheville.com. It's not too late to take some fantastic ghost tours. We have the new vampire and occult tours. My new favorite, hauntedasheville.com. You know, in my book, Pet Ghosts, Animal Encounters from Beyond the Grave, that came out years ago, I wrote some about headless horsemen. And, you know, how odd it is to think of, you know, some reason that a man's spirit could be seen on a horse. And, you know, we just played one of my favorites there from Disney's The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, one of the best songs out there. But here is what I found when I really started looking into the lore of headless horsemen. Horse apparitions, now this is again, this is from Pet Ghosts. Horse apparitions are frequently seen with ghostly human counterparts. The best examples may be the headless horseman, tales of galloping pitch-black steeds mounted by furious decapitated riders have lingered for hundreds of years, especially found in some of the earliest German and Scandinavian legends, as documented in the 1700s by folklorist Karl Musaus. Such specters are usually the product of wars. A revered officer set on battle who suddenly loses his head exists in a state of delirious confusion. Energy of the tortured man. Frustrated by his inability to complete the fight, especially with adrenaline pumping, may burn a hole between this dimension and the next. Headless horsemen are unable to tell the difference between friend and foe, and so they attack anyone unfortunate enough to cross their paths. The strangest part is the very fact that they ride horses. If a soldier is beheaded but the animal survives, why should the creature be doomed to appear as a misty slave of his master? If the horse is killed at the same time, well, then it makes sense. Otherwise, we must wonder if the beheaded chooses from some stable of phantasmal equines in the netherworld, or if the soldier's horse instantly transforms from a physical to non-physical beast by means of a process misunderstood by science. On the other hand, in some cases, they might simply be imprints, therefore negating the necessity for the horse death. Regardless of the origin, these creatures carrying tormented human souls are certainly impressive phantomals. And I go on and I talk in this book more about horse apparitions, and there's one that I want to bring up here that just the idea of this thing for me conjures up something very creepy. Shelley Forrest, have you guys ever heard of Hearn the Hunter?
No.
Most Americans, I'm sure, probably have not. Hearn the Hunter is an English specter. And it's a very weird, chilling apparition. I'll just read again the best description I can from my book, Pet Ghost. Another well-known ghost horse and non-headless rider duo is Hearn the Hunter in England's Windsor Park. Now, apparently, around the year 1400, a great forest keeper for King Richard II was a rugged man named Hearn. He spent most of his time alone in the woods, concealed, looking out for poachers and trespassers with whom he dealt harshly. With time, due to gradual loss of his youth and outdoor skill, or fear of being disgraced by some perverse offense, he hanged himself from an oak tree. Since then, the mighty hunter's charging apparition, high astride a black steed, has terrified hundreds of trespassers. The protective Hearn is said to wear a stag's skull on his head, its long, twisting horns making the whole display beastly and surreal. In 1843, author W. Harrison Ainsworth described the site in his novel Windsor Castle. Here's the description, quote, "A wild spectral object possessing a slight resemblance to a human being, clad in the skin of a deer and wearing on its head a sort of helmet formed of the skull of a stag, from which branched a large pair of antlers. It was surrounded by a blue phosphoric light," end quote. But this chilling apparition was even recorded much earlier, 1599, by none other than William Shakespeare, in his work called The Merry Wives of Windsor. Here's a quote. "There is an old tale that goes that Herne the hunter, sometimes a keeper here in Windsor Forest, doth all the winter time, at still midnight, walk round about an oak with great ragged horns, and there he blasts the tree, and takes the cattle, and makes milk kine yield blood, and shakes a chain in a most hideous and dreadful manner. You have heard of such a spirit, and well you know the superstitious idle-headed eld received and did deliver to our age this tale of Herne the hunter for a truth." There you go, a little Shakespeare for Halloween. Didn't see that coming, did you, Shelley?
No, I did not.
I'm a very cultured man.
Yes, you are.
I could have used my English accent, but I didn't want to make all the other men look that bad.
Uh-huh.
To look that cretin and crude below my superior cultural instinct. Right?
Now you're stretching.
All right. Here is an odd story. This is one from Seattle, Washington. Now, we have all heard of this thing called human spontaneous combustion. The idea that you can just all of a sudden just burst into flames. I remember when I was a kid, my mother would never let me have underoos, even though I wanted them. I wanted to dress up like Superman or Batman, but no. Apparently, a child wearing underoos once burst into flames because he got too close to a fireplace. So my mother was determined that underoos were flammable things that kids were wearing. Happy birthday, Mom! Well, listen to this. There is a new culprit in the human spontaneous combustion mystery. Banana Boat Sunscreen. The makers of Banana Boat Sunscreen is recalling some 500,000 bottles of spray-on lotion after reports that a handful of people have caught on fire after applying the product and coming into contact with an open flame.
Okay, what about the regular lotion? The after-sun lotion? Because I don't want to burst into flames.
Is this what you use, Shelley?
Yes.
Well, you're either way, you're going to burst into flames. If you wear sunscreen, you will. If you don't, you will. You just have to live in a cave. You're too fair to be out in the sun.
I guess.
It says here, the company there is pulling 23 varieties of Ultra Mist sunscreen off store shelves due to the risk of the lotion igniting when exposed to fire. It includes aerosol products like Ultra Mist Sport, Ultra Mist Ultra Defense, and Ultra Mist Kids. Okay, so it sounds like it's just the misty stuff.
Okay, I don't use the misty stuff.
Yeah. It says a company spokesman said there have been 5 reports of people suffering burns after using it in the last year. 4 in the U.S., 1 in Canada. And they say more than 20 million units have been sold, however, since they launched in 2010. They're thinking the problem is the spray valve. And they say that it's over-applying the product, and so it takes longer to dry, and that raises the flammability risk. If a consumer comes in contact with a flame, there is potential to ignite. No smoking. We're going to take a break. Can you believe it? When we come back, we will already be in the final minutes of hour number one, and a traditional reading for you about Halloween. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's Speaking of Strange.
Hey, my name's...
October 31st. It was like the earth had died for a night, and on its last exhale, as the life slipped away, the darkness of the other world had oozed into the void left behind. Ever so gently, the sun had submerged into the grave of the horizon, leaving behind a cold blue world to fend for itself. The leaves and trees were dry and crackly, and the air was so thin that it could not restrain the spirits of the dead, unleashing them into the helpless realm of the living. The color black had never looked blacker, and the lustrous moon above, a mangy cat at the side of the road, and the fire in a jack-o'-lantern's eyes never looked more sinister. The sky above felt bigger and bleaker than before, its infinite mystery overwhelming, and within each shadow, a spectral predator lurked and waited, watching, always watching. But amongst the more substantial, underlying malevolence of the night, frivolities danced about its crust. There were rubber bats flapping from bands of elastic, fabric ghosts hanging from trees, grinning gap-toothed pumpkins at every doorstep, and the people, the people. It was like the world had turned inside out for a night, and all of society filled the streets. Both children and adults were decked in costumes of every kind. Witches, goblins, werewolves, Frankenstein monsters, and grotesque, slashed faces strolled every lane. Plastic cauldrons of candy sweets abounded. Houses were mummified with soaring rolls of toilet paper. Dry ice fog rolled off green fountains of punch. And floating apples were bobbed for from wide, germ-filled vats. In ghoulish garb, storytellers sat around lamping campfires relating creepy stories of the past. Stories of hooks and hitchhikers, spook-infested houses, heads in bags, cold-blooded murders and pranks gone terribly wrong. All of them true, of course. And at Helen's Bridge, teens gathered to spot the ghostly mistress, perhaps to find her handprint burned permanently into the finish of their cars. At other places, like the secluded vacant water tower, the open cut, or Spivey Mountain, some of the more bold searched to find Satanists absorbed in their cursed rites, a human sacrifice splayed before them. Young men, intrepid and dashing in their capes and masks, competed for the favors of young women, dressed seductively in the revealing costumes of morbid temptresses. Smoke, candy, mischief, tales, spirits, ancient evil, and the crisp air. This was Halloween. A passage from my novel called The Evil in Asheville. A lot of people do not realize the word Asheville has the word evil right in the middle of it. A-S-H-E-V-I-L-L-E. That's sort of how I think of the Halloween season around here, especially back in the day, eons ago, when we were young, Forrest, when we were young. This is Speaking of Strange in the final minutes of hour number one. Coming up next hour, we are going to see what's happening in the field tonight around the mountains. We're going to go to specifically Pinhead's graveyard. They've upped the ante. These guys have decided that you know, making people faint, making people pee themselves, that's not enough. They wanted to go further than this. They wanted to, I don't know, are they trying to kill people now? Are they really trying to get sued? We're going to find out, because they are doing things before they've never done. They even have the Leatherface, the guy who played Leatherface in Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3. You know, Forrest, I don't know what that casting process is like to become like Leatherface or Jason or whatever. And, you know, there are lots of different sequels to these films, Halloween. So, you know, you have different guys who have played the role. And this guy we're going to interview, he is coming to Pinhead's Graveyard. He played Leatherface in the third movie. But honestly, you know, do you just have to be a big guy? There has to be something extra there. They're sensing, like, something intimidating about you.
Of course. There has to be.
Yeah. And we'll ask him, like, how did this happen for you? You know, how do you get to be that guy?
I mean, can you imagine the auditions for Leatherface?
That'd be really scary. That'd be maybe scarier than the movie.
I mean, I think it's one of those things, like, okay, I want this guy. I don't think there's even auditions for something like that. Like, I want this guy.
Maybe. We will find out. But I'm kind of happy that we're just going to be talking to him via telephone. Because I don't know how I'd feel right now if I knew the guy who played Leatherface was about to walk in that door and sit down here.
Yeah.
Even if he were like a mile down the road, I think I would do this by telephone. I don't want to let him in this building. That's just, you know, what if he finally flips out and he wants to become the real Leatherface? It happens. What if he strips down naked? Then you're really screwed. This guy, if he's big enough to be Leatherface, oh my God. Hey, listen to this, Shelley. Here's a little bit of trivia. My mom will hate this. Studies have shown that you are never more than 10 feet away from a spider.
Ew.
Yeah. Happy birthday, Mom. Happy birthday. Hey, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will visit with Pinhead's Graveyard. And then we'll talk to Leatherface. Yeah. Happy Halloween, everybody. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's the show where the unusual becomes usual. It's called Speaking of Strange. And we'll be back for this special continuation of our Halloween edition right after this. Right in the-